Welcome to another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love, hosted by Richard Osler. My guest on today's podcast is my friend Harper Dawn Forsgren. Welcome, Harper.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
And Harper has brought along her good friend, Sophie Huff. Welcome, Sophie.
Hello, thanks.
And Sophie may chime in at times on this podcast.
We hope so. We encourage Sophie to chime in.
Have the little giggles in the background.
As we visited before this podcast, I sense that these two are really good friends and are helping each other walk a road together. We started with prayer. We pray that the Spirit will be here. We pray that you will feel the spirit of Harper's story as she shares some of her journey that will help all of us. Just as background, Harper served a mission in July of 2015 to December of 2016 in the Anaheim, California mission. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
And so that means you've been home from your mission for about 2 years. Mm-hmm. And you're a student at Brigham Young University, and you grew up in a little small town. Tell us that town.
It's called Richmond, Utah. It's right on the border of Idaho, so it's on the Utah side, but it's about 20 minutes north of Logan. So, yeah, it's like 2,500 people. My dad's a farmer. We have, you know, there's more cows than people, we say, but we love it. So,
so shout out to that beautiful town.
So, shout out to Richmond. Honestly, they deserve it.
And one day, June 24th, 2018, I was either in church or home from church scanning my Twitter feed, and I saw your tweet.
Yes.
And that tweet now has about 3,800 likes and 492 retweets. I retweeted it. I loved it.
Yeah. You did. You were my biggest fan. I loved it.
Will you share that tweet with us?
Yeah, of course. Well, now.
If you can cue it up.
If I can cue it up.
Yeah, read that tweet for us.
Yeah, so it says, "We as members of the Mormon Church need to stop focusing on we need to love people because our love will bring them back to the church, and instead focus on we need to love people because people deserve to be loved."
I just love that.
Thank you.
I think it's what Christ taught and what he demonstrated. What caused you to write that tweet?
So a very, very backstory. I think is really my family and my parents. They're actually kind of funny. They all kind of mock me for this tweet. Not for the tweet, but they make fun of the fact that it got so big because they are all kind of like, yeah, well, we've all believed that our whole life. And all of a sudden you get popular for putting it into words. And yeah, but I feel like my parents were awesome and they always raised us to look at other people like Christ would love them, you know, and they were always amazing at that. So that was something that me and my family, we've always really believed. And then kind of the backstory of how this tweet came to be is that I actually had a really rough day or a really rough week in Provo. And I just really didn't want to go to church at all. And so I had texted my sister who lives in Kaysville. And I just said, you know, I'm not going to go to church unless I come with you. And can I come? And of course she was like, yeah, whatever. I don't care. Please come. Please do what you need to do. And so I went with her to her ward. And while we were there, I really can't remember what was said, but it was something that kind of was along that line of, well, you know, this person isn't necessarily active, so, you know, what do you do, or something like that. And I had just turned to my sister and I had just said, you know, I find that really hard to believe that this is something that's kind of in the culture of the church of, well, the only reason that we need to pay attention to these people is because they're struggling, and our whole goal is to bring them back to the church. And she agreed because she's also part of the family, and that's kind of how we have always thought. And And I just kind of pondered it for a little bit, and it just kind of came. The tweet just kind of came naturally, and I literally thought I was going to get like 3 likes, and that was going to be Sophie and my two sisters that are on Twitter. And it got a lot bigger than I thought it was, and I think that was because it rang true with a lot of people.
Yeah.
A lot of times I think we kind of think or speak within ourselves, within our little groups, and say like, oh, that's not how it should be, or this is how I feel, but... it was really cool to see how many people resonated with it once it kind of got out and a lot of people shared their stories. And I think it was really cool. It was a really cool experience for us. So
that's one of the things I love about Twitter is anybody can have a voice, and you never know, you know, whose voice is going to become sort of viral. And
yeah,
I just love that tweet. And it was just somehow it resonated so well with me. I'd always thought that, but I'd never been able to put it in the kind of words.
Yeah.
So will you read that tweet for us one more time?
I would love to read the tweet
one
more
time. Any of you out there listeners missed it the first time?
We as members of the Mormon Church need to stop focusing on we need to love people because our love will bring them back to the church, and instead focus on we need to love people because people deserve to be loved.
That's great. So more of this podcast, this background for our listeners. Harper had fulfilled an honorable, successful mission, but came home and talks about the PTSD mm-hmm. that you developed. I don't know what the right word is, that occurred logically because of the events of your mission and how difficult that's been. And then it's talked about, we'll talk about her journey since her mission and how it's been very difficult in some ways to understand how that kind of experience happened when you're giving everything to the Lord.
Yeah.
Harper, for our listeners, is a committed member of the church, active in the church, great relationship with the Savior, but is willing to just be vulnerable and share some of the hard experience that she's had. She's blogged about this, and I think it's the authenticness of who you are, Harper, and your ability to be open and vulnerable is what we're all kind of craving. So I'm just honored you'd share some of this. So let's go back to your mission and this first difficult experience with a sister missionary who was really struggling and even had a suicide attempt in your presence.
Yeah, so...
there is nothing in the MTC that prepares you for that.
No, there really isn't. I'm
not aware of any training for that.
Yeah, and you know, I think a lot of times... you hear people's homecoming talks and everything, and they'll talk about their mission being so hard. And I remembered preparing and always being like, yeah, well, I know it's going to be hard. But you always kind of think like, oh, yeah, it's going to suck when someone slams the door in your face, or it's going to be, oh, man, oh, I'm going to be so tired. And like, yeah, that for sure happens. But there are a lot of other things that are hard that I don't think people talk about a lot. And my experience, I'm not going to say that it's something that everyone experiences, but I think the experience that I had can resonate with a lot of people in the fact that it wasn't necessarily common, but it was due a lot, you know, I can't even figure out what I'm trying to say, but...
You're doing great, Harper.
but it was something that was really hard, and it had a really strong impact, and it was something that when I came home, I didn't really know if I could share because it wasn't what the mold of missions was. And I felt guilty. I felt guilty about the things that I went through because if I was a good member of the church, if I was a good missionary, if I was obedient, I shouldn't have gone through those things is kind of what I thought. And so eventually that's actually what led me to create the blog, is to talk about those things.
Tell our listeners the name of your blog.
Oh, yeah. So the URL is, I guess this is my hobby now, .wordpress.com. The whole blog is called House of Glass. It's actually me and my sister co-write on it. And we both just really try to talk transparently about our journeys through the gospel, through the church, and be open about the struggles and the things that I think a lot of people face, but don't really feel like they have a voice, or they feel like if they stated some of these things, It's kind of a scary thing. So that was kind of our goal, is to just start bringing awareness to things that people don't really like to talk about. And then just
need
show,
to talk about.
Yeah, we need to talk about it, because people need to know that they're not alone. People, a lot of times, especially in the church, I feel like a lot less people are walking out of the church, and a lot more people are feeling like they're pushed out of the church.
Interesting.
And what we want to do is we want to give people on the outskirts that are struggling with things some type of place where they can say, okay, you know what, this isn't just a me thing, and I don't have to feel pushed out. And so that's what we're doing. I guess this is my hobby now, .wordpress.com.
Yeah. That was
my sister's.
I think what's interesting, me and Harper have talked about this, but just the idea that some people after her blogs have been like, oh, well, she has one foot out the door. She's on her way out. Stuff like that. And I just really appreciate the culture that has been established with the blogs as well, of if you struggle with things or if you have questions, that's perfectly normal and you're not alone in that. And I think your vulnerability and transparency has a lot of power in the fact where just because you have questions or just because there are certain things that you struggle with, that doesn't mean that you're on your way out. Like, there's people that are here for you and we're all trying to work through it.
I love that.
Oh, we love Sophie. Thank you.
So do you want to talk about the actual experience that led to the PTSD?
Yes. Awesome. Sorry, I did kind of get derailed there. But so on my mission, pretty early on in my mission, I was put with a sister missionary. And little by little, during our time together, she started to display a lot of anxious and depressive behaviors, and started expressing some erratic behaviors as well. And I have dealt with depression and anxiety my whole life. And so for me, that was something that it was totally fine. We can work on it. We can do things and we can, you know, we can be okay. And so it kind of started out with that, but slowly, little by little, it kind of transformed into a very unhealthy situation. I think a lot of times when you feel a specific way, when you have these struggles and you don't really know why and you can't put a finger onto an emotion, you tend to try to place blame on other people. And my companion at the time, she wasn't really equipped to deal with the emotions that she was experiencing. And so she did a lot to displace those emotions onto the closest person, and that was me. And so it turned into an incredibly emotionally taxing experience for me. Very vaguely, without getting into way too many details, there were a lot of points where I felt at a loss, you know, when you as a person don't necessarily feel like you're a bad person, but you're pretty consistently told you are, that kind of puts you in a weird position. And eventually over time, the anxiety and the frustration and the mental illness kind of transformed itself into self-harm.
Mm-hmm.
We tried to talk to leaders about it, things like that, and didn't really feel like anything was getting done.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing, I don't know necessarily if nothing was getting transmitted up the way it should have or kind of where it was stopping, but there were multiple cries for help that weren't really answered until eventually my companion made a suicide attempt while I was with her. And that was extremely traumatic. That was extremely hard because as a companion, you feel so responsible.
Wow.
And as someone who is in that kind of situation where I was feeling so hurt by this companionship anyway,
mm-hmm.
and I was feeling so, so let down by the situation. And
were you
then
the senior companion?
I was.
So
I was.
Feel more responsibility here.
Yeah. And that was so hard. And there were multiple times that I prayed. And I prayed that if we weren't companions, that she would be okay. You know, I'd hoped a lot of times that it was my fault.
Wow.
Because if it was my fault, that meant that her life was going to get better. And that was a really hard time. And I felt like I couldn't really talk about it with anyone. When I tried to reach out, I felt very invalidated. Not for necessarily everyone's own fault, but that's just kind of what ended up happening. And it kind of talks about it in one of my blogs, What My PTSD Taught Me About God. It's my latest one, but it was really hard for me because I couldn't talk to my parents. You can't call your parents on the mission. I couldn't talk to my best friends. I couldn't, you know, reach out to people. And it's a very lonely experience being in that situation where you not only feel alone, but you kind of are. You're kind of, the rules kind of make it so you are alone.
I'm just going to read a little bit from your blog.
Yeah, of course.
I just love this when I read this earlier today. I sat on my ground of an ill-furnished apartment day after day writing letters to my parents that I would never send. I imagine what it'd be like just to call them once to hear my mom's voice on the other end of the phone. I wondered what I would say to them in that moment. How do you tell your parents that you're not sure if you're still a person? So honest, Harper. How do you tell them all the thoughts in your head, especially the ones that even scare yourself? This is just so thoughtfully written. It's so honest. I just, somehow your blog just brings me into your apartment in this incredibly difficult moment. No confiding in the elders. You know, don't look like you're struggling to the members. So I was alone, literally incapable of being anything but alone, but somehow waiting for someone to deliver me and give the ability to exist another day. Wow.
Yeah. When my parents read that, it was really hard.
Yeah. I would read that for my kids. That'd be really hard.
Yeah.
But I think it's very therapeutic to write that. I assume that's part of the healing is to write.
Yeah. That's a very big thing for me is being able to put my words into a place where you can just see how they're painted out. And then being able to share it is something that's been extremely good for me and really facilitated for me the healing process. After my mission, Sophie knows, she was there, I actually kind of hid a lot of things from a lot of people. I had gone on, this was actually fairly early on in my mission, like really early on in my mission, and I ended up staying on my mission.
Wow.
But I ended up hiding the fact that I was having these panic attacks all the time. Not necessarily every morning, but a lot of mornings. I would go into the shower because that was the only place that I really could be alone. And I would just, either I was mad or I was scared or I was sad, and it would just flow through me, you know, and I would feel all these feelings and all this pain, and then I would get out of the shower and I would go to work.
Wow.
Because I didn't want someone else's decisions to make it so I couldn't fulfill my mission. And so I hid a lot of stuff, and I hid it for the rest of my mission. I mean, people kind of knew. I kind of talked to my companions about, like, they knew, like, the vague outline of it, but I didn't really talk about it. And I came home, and I didn't really talk about it. And actually, in a blog, it was an earlier one, the one that I wrote initially talking about my PTSD, I kind of talked about the fact that I had gotten to a point where I thought that was normal. Like, I thought the way I was acting was normal until I was actually with Sophie, and I was, like, apologizing for everything. And she was like, why are you apologizing all the time? And I was like, because I'm scared. because I'm so afraid of everyone around me all the time. And that was so hard for me to admit to myself that this wasn't a natural coming home process. What happened wasn't natural, and that it was something that I was dealing with and I wasn't dealing with well. And that kind of spurred a lot of self-reflection and a lot of self-healing. And that's kind of, that was probably 6 months after I got home, do you think?
Does that all trace back to the suicide attempt, this, and all the trauma that occurred in your life around someone else's suicide attempt? Is it more than that? Is it the lack of sort of infrastructure to help you heal?
I think it's actually kind of interesting because a lot of times it definitely starts with the suicidal companion and the struggles I had there. But what I kind of realized through therapy, which everyone should go to if you need plug for therapy because it's amazing. But what I ended up realizing is that a lot of it was actually connected to the authority that was around me. I felt very abandoned by the people that were supposed to be my leaders. Mm-hmm. I felt very abandoned, and I felt like there should have been so much more that was done. Mm-hmm. And I was supposed to have people that literally had revelation personally for me, right? Mm-hmm. And that were my parents when my parents weren't away. And why did this still happen to me? And that stemmed a lot of problems with authority. I have a very big authority issue. And okay. just because when I needed, not when I wanted, but when I needed someone there for me, nothing happened. No one was there. And why is that? And I was mad. And I think a lot of that then traced up to God and how I felt about God. And I think I kind of equated God into that mix too of, okay, so these little mere mortals weren't there for me. And I understand because they're mortals or whatever. But what about you? What about you, God? Why weren't you there? Why didn't you do more for me? And that was the second factor. That was the second compounding factor of it. I always kind of say it's a two-sided thing, my PTSD. And the first one is what happened with my companion. And the second one is what happened when I felt like no one did anything for me.
That is really helpful. It's incredibly helpful for me, just understanding better.
Yeah. Oh, and just so everyone knows, PTSD stands for post-traumatic stress disorder, just in case anyone doesn't know what that is.
You know, 10 years ago, I might have not been, my experience now is just to honor how you feel and sort of hold all your pain as much as I could if I were your priesthood leader, your friend, and just, I'm not clinically trained. I don't know what a clinically trained person would do, but as you share that, my heart just goes out to you. And even though I've never had that experience, I would validate this incredibly difficult experience and this feeling of abandonment. And I wouldn't sort of say, what about this situation, or wasn't this leader here this, and sort of challenge you on the story. I think we all just need to honor everybody's stories. And this is real. And it is a limitation of our restored church. At times, we do not fully minister to our members.
Yeah.
And I think then that's logically can be very difficult for somebody because we're kind of taught that we have these fail-safe systems in place. And I know probably as a YSA bishop, you know, there's some people that could come on my podcast and say, well, wait a second, you know, this is kind of where you drop the ball.
Yeah.
And I would learn to honor that. And I'd say, well, help me know how to do better.
Yeah.
But I also get this link with God because, you know, it sounds like you felt God wasn't there. And why could this happen? Here you are just putting your life on hold.
Yeah.
It's not like you're selfishly doing something. You're actually in the middle of peak unselfishness.
I hope so. I don't
know. On a 1 to 10 scale, you're at a 10. you're sort of then saying, well, why? You know, who are you, God? And yeah, that seems pretty logical to me that you would have those feelings. More thoughts on this experience, Harper?
More thoughts. I don't know. I think the biggest thing, especially with mental illness, which is something that we really try to be proponents of with my blog, in life itself, is just, like you said, everybody's story is their own. And everyone's feelings are valid because they're their feelings, you know? And we can try to change people. We can try to say, well, this isn't my experience, so you can't feel that way. But in all honesty, these experiences make us who we are, and these experiences, everyone reacts differently to these experiences. For me, I spent a lot of time being really mad. And it kind of sounds, I say it like really happy, you know, I was mad, but I really was. I was a very angry person.
Your mission, after your mission, or both?
It kind of both. I was very, I don't know, I would hope, I don't know, my companions are going to call me on this later, but I always felt like I had a very good relationship with almost all of my companions. And I never necessarily felt like I was like angry at them, but I was very angry at the system on my mission. And I was very angry. I was really angry a lot of times at specific people. And a lot of them knew, and I've talked to them and they knew that. When I got home, I was both angry. I was simultaneously struggling with a lot of detachment issues that I had, where I was so insecure in the relationships that I had, that I was so insecure about them. I pushed them all away and then like held on to them from arm's length, yeah, because I needed them.
Yourself. But yeah, you need them, but you're protecting yourself.
I needed
from more
them,
pain.
But I was so scared and I was so mad. And that anger is something that, I mean, I've always kind of been a fiery person. Like that's good. Kind of my life. But like I'll you know, fight back. But when I got home, it was just so much anger. Once all of the missionary wore off, you know, where all the missionary, you kind of tell yourself to lose yourself in the work. You tell yourself that if your mission sucks, it's because you're not consecrated enough, you know? And so that was kind of how I was on my mission of like, okay, well, let me just like get it together because this is my problem. And then when I got home, I was like, no,
good,
this is everyone's problem. But then it went the other way. And then I was like, this is everyone's problem but mine.
That's honest.
And that was kind of how it was for a while until I ended up just kind of hitting a wall in my life at home and just realizing that I couldn't go on being so mad at these people. And little by little, I've tried so hard to recommend that anger, recommend reconcile. words are hard, but I've tried really hard to get that anger away and to understand why it's there. Because I think that's another thing. You can't push anger away. You can't push these experiences away and how you feel. You have to embrace it and acknowledge it and understand where it's coming from, and then let that be part of you, but not let it own you. And that's kind of what my journey was after my mission.
And I think that's a sign of incredible strength, because I think that's the harder road. And I think it takes incredible courage and strength to sort of hit this stuff head on. Okay. And, you know, I think that's one of the impressions. That's probably one of the reasons I felt impressed. I had a real direct impression to have you on the podcast, because your story could help others.
Oh, thank you.
But I think that is very helpful for our listeners. Just a couple comments on anger, and I at first, when I served as a YSA bishop, anybody was angry. I wanted to is de-angering a word? I was uncomfortable with anybody that was angry or mad.
Yeah.
And I've learned that that's a logical secondary emotion from pain.
Yeah.
And most people that are angry have a great deal of pain. And I've learned that it's justified pain. Yeah. And it's pain we need to honor and understand. And then I think it's what you've done. It's what happens with the anger over a period of time that where I think real agency kicks in.
Yeah.
And what you're going to do with that anger. And so there's a certain point where it can become cancerous.
Yeah.
And it can really lead us down. But I love the way you've sort of faced this anger head on. And you may still have anger. It doesn't sort of like switch itself off, and you may be re-triggered.
Yeah.
By some of the same things. And that's not a sign of weakness. It's not a sign of a setback. I think it's a sign of just the practical situation you're in. And another thing that comes to mind is this term called church-generated pain. Mm. So if we took all the pain in people's lives and categorized it into sections, some people, their pain comes from the death of a loved one, hit and run, a child that's sick. And but there is this category called church-generated pain. It's pain that results from our church. And I think all churches have this, and our church isn't just perfect. And so its imperfections can generate pain in our members. And we don't really honor that. We don't really, then how do you, if you have pain from another category, you turn to the church to heal you. But if the pain comes from the church, which yours has, it's very difficult to know how to heal yourself from that.
Yeah.
And I think you've done a really good job.
Thank you.
Talk about, and Sophie, do you have any thoughts at this point?
I do have one.
Ooh.
Sophie's always good for a good thought.
Yeah, we love Sophie's kinda thoughts.
I think there's power that comes in awareness of where you're actually at and things. Where you said, like, looking at your anger head on, face?
Yeah.
I think I said head on. Head on. I don't, okay. I don't
just
know.
Looking at it, I think sometimes as members we have this idea of this is what I should be. Or just as people, like, I should be over here. And we live in that false reality of I'm over here because I'm supposed to be over here. And so we treat our problems in that false reality area instead of actually looking at the emotions we are feeling right now, even if we don't fully understand them yet or if we don't think they're okay, but we're kind of taught to dismiss them in a lot of ways. And so I think awareness and ownership, those two things bring a lot of power in direction and how you can start that healing process. And it's okay to not be where you think you should be at and to just look at where you actually are and start building from there.
That's really very good. Talk about, when I met with the YSAs, there was all this kind of pain. There was sin-related pain, and we kind of have that. It's sort of, that seems to be easy to sort of give a step-by-step process to eliminate that pain, but then there's no sin-related pain here.
Yeah.
You haven't done anything wrong here, but you feel pain. It's a different type of pain, but both pain need to be kind of taken over by the atonement of Jesus Christ. And when I was a YSA bishop, it was kind of hard to know the formula to sort of take that kind of pain away.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts for our listeners about the role of the Savior to sort of heal people from the different type of pain they have? And has he helped heal you in this area? Do you feel like you've kind of been alone on this road?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think there have been times where I felt really alone, and that's because I made myself alone. I've always kind of said this, and I feel like it's applicable here maybe, but I think a lot of times when we look at the atonement, we hear a lot of the times that it's for everyone in every aspect of their lives. But we don't actually think about that when it comes time for application. And a big problem that we have, or that I have, I shouldn't say we, but is that I either look at the atonement as, well, it applies to everyone else except me, or it applies to me and not everyone else, you know? And it's kind of that dichotomy of like, well, it kind of applies to all of us because we're all children of God. But for me, I think that was a big part of it, is that for a really long time, first of all, due to the emotional strain and the emotional abuse that I feel like I went through, I put a lot of guilt on myself that now I realize wasn't necessarily warranted. I really, really thought that I had ruined someone else's life for an extremely long time, and that was really hard for me.
Wow, that's really hard.
It sucked, but and I realized for a long time, well, I thought for a long time that that was what I needed to be healed from. And so it was kind of that idea of bandaging over a hemorrhaging wound that I was healing something that wasn't necessarily what I needed to be healed from at that time. And I think really for me, what was important with the Savior is understanding the fact that he's a lot like our therapist, or, you know, he's a lot like the people in our lives that listen and they take things on and they don't try to change you until you ask for their help. And for me, I think the atonement, I wasn't applying the atonement because I didn't really know what I wanted. I didn't really know what I needed. I wanted to be mad and I wanted to think that the whole missionary system sucked for a while, you know, and it doesn't. I am very, very glad now that I served a mission. I am extremely glad. But, you know, in that time, I think I was trying to use the atonement to fix other things. And what I eventually ended up kind of reconciling is that I can be honest with Jesus Christ about what I need healing from. And I don't need healing from a sin. I mean, there were things that I did in that companionship that I wish I hadn't have done. And I will take complete ownership for the fact that I was not a perfect companion.
Like all of us.
In any way, shape, or form. And there were so many things that I could have done better. But I can't keep trying to use the atonement on that when I need the atonement for other things, you know? Well, and you can do both. That's actually probably scratch that. But
I like the idea you've got to focus on one thing at a time.
Yeah, you have to focus. And for me, it took a long time to get to the point where I realized that I needed the atonement for healing. Because of what happened to me, and not trying to fix something that I was forcing myself to feel guilty about.
Good. Sometimes when a YSA would break up, I don't know if this is the same example, and they wanted to sort of heal the person they were breaking up with.
Yeah.
And I remember John, by the way, talk basically saying, you've got to turn that healing over to the Lord. You can't heal that person. You know, your former... If you break up with somebody, you've got to move forward in your life, even though you care about that person. I don't know if that's similar to this sort of situation. It's someone you care about, and I don't think you've done anything wrong here, so it's not like, but you'd recognize that person, you would still like to be able to be healed. And so I think you're just turning that over to the Savior,
yeah, and
realizing that you need the atonement and the power of that healing. I sometimes think people chemically can't feel the Spirit sometimes when they go through I always get these backwards.
PTSD.
I wrote them down here so I wouldn't.
I know. It's a hard. It's a hard acronym.
But, you know, I remember talking to a therapist that some people don't have the chemicals in their brain to feel the Spirit because of their PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes people then, well, I must really be far away from God and the Savior because I can't feel the Spirit, even though I'm doing all these things. And then it just sort of whirlpools them down because they look in the mirror and go, I'm really broken.
Yeah.
Why I think it's okay for some people not to feel the Spirit for a period of time because they're just, their body can't feel the Spirit. Any thoughts on that? Does that resonate with you? Or?
Yeah. No, it definitely does. I don't necessarily know what they call them in medical jargon, etc. But I kind of call it my spiral is when I I get triggered and I go, and I go down. I don't know what else to say, but I kind of spiral down really, really quickly. And I used to feel really, really guilty about it. Something would trigger me and it would kind of take me on a pathway. It kind of felt like a escalator just kind of leading you back to a situation that you didn't want to be in, that you didn't really associate with that situation. And all of a sudden you're back and you're there and you're angry or you're sad or you're scared again. And in those spirals, it's so hard to feel the spirit. And that was so scary when I was on my mission. It's still scary, honestly. I'm not going to lie and say that it's a normal thing to feel. Because for me, once again, my main emotion is anger, and that manifests. And I feel myself getting angry and angry and angry. And I keep logically thinking, if you stopped right now and started thinking positively, you could feel the spirit again. And I can't. and that for me made me feel like a very bad Mormon for a really long time, a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And it made me feel like a very ungrateful daughter of my Heavenly Father. But what I realized in my tenure as a PTSD member, is that, you know what, sometimes you just have to embrace that you need to go through this. And when you get back out, when I get back out, I'll be able to feel the spirit again. But right now, I can't, and I can't once again make myself guilty for not doing that or not really feeling the good spirit in that moment. But yeah, it's so hard. It's crazy how hard it is to break the spiral when I'm going down into it. It's really intense. But
so I have a clarifying question.
Yeah.
So when you are spiraling, is it a mix of both, like, letting yourself go with it, or are you continually fighting to get that connection, or is it once you're out, then you fight to get that, or it's more organic? I'm just trying to understand a little bit better.
I think a lot of times what happens someone will say something, and I'll connect it to something else. And then that'll make me more mad, and then that'll connect me to something else, and then that'll make me upset. And so I, like, start, like, linking things downward, and, like, when I realize, which is usually a few, like, probably 15 minutes into me being a nightmare, I start to kind of fight it. You know, I don't want to be in that situation. I don't want to feel that anymore. And then I'll start to, like, work on trying to overcome this situation or whatever these feelings are. And you know what? Sometimes you can bring yourself out there and say, okay, that wasn't actually as big of a deal as I thought it was. But when there are times that, you know, when it's something really big, or it's an emotion that I didn't even realize, or an experience that I didn't even realize was, like, gonna do this to me, a lot of times, I don't know, I'm working on facing that while I'm down there so that I understand what that emotion is, so that eventually I can figure it out. I'm not great at it. I'm really bad at it, actually. But so I guess, yeah, I try. If you can get out of it, I mean, if I can, I try to.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But a lot of times, if I can't, you just kind of have to figure out why am I feeling this way down here, and eventually when I'm out of it, I'll figure out what I can do and what steps I can take to work on it. Does that make sense?
It does. And, you know, as I listen to you talk, I just see your older self. Sometimes I see people 10, 20, 30 years. You're how old?
I'm 22.
So it would just be wonderful to pull out another microphone and have your 32-year-old self talk.
Would that be the coolest? I would love to meet her. I don't know what she's going to be like.
And your 42-year-old self. But I have to think your older selves, and I get really tender, would just put their arms around you and say, this experience is helping you for your 32-year-old self and your 42-year-old self. And you will be, and this is for our listeners, you will be, this is incredibly painful. And you didn't choose this. And no one really understands the degree of pain. If you had pancreatic cancer, we could kind of get that. But this is just like that. In fact, it's more complicated because it's just, how do you solve this? But I would think your older selves, as a, you know, when you're raising kids, you will look back on this experience and you'll say, well, that was hell, but that was for my good. And the skills that I have developed and the depth, the Carthage jail type of experience you're living that no one really understands, you know, that your older selves will just be so grateful for this experience. So I don't look at the experience as you're permanently scarred, your damaged goods, you're somehow lesser, you've had a brutal mission. I look at this as just, I want to talk to your older selves because of the gifts you have to help other people. And I want to, Jake Watts, if you're listening, you sent me this quote during church, texted it to me, but it's from the title of the book is called The Wounded Healer. Isn't that an interesting term? The Wounded Healer, a Norwen, N-O-U-W-E-N, Norwen Henry wrote this, a minister's service, this is you. You're a minister, Harper. Same with you, Sophie, and same with you listeners out there. A minister's service will not be perceived as authentic unless it comes from the wounded heart by the suffering about which he or she speaks. The great illusion of leadership is to think that others can be led out of the desert by someone who has never been there. You are in the desert. And you are coming out of the desert, and you have the ability then to help other people out of the desert. That is one of the great gifts of this really brutal world you're walking, Harper, is you will be able to lead people out of the desert, and you will heal people. And I think that's something you may do for your own children, you may do for your spouse, you may do in a church setting, but I think it's one of the great gifts of this terribly difficult experience. And I don't know what Heavenly Father's, you know, I don't quite know why these things happen. Talk about that. We talked about it before we started the podcast, but why do really bad things happen, Harper? What do you think?
What do I think? You know, yeah, we kind of talked about this a little bit before the podcast, and I think a lot of times we wish that really bad things happened because 2 seconds later we were going to be able to be 7,000% better at whatever we needed to be. You know, I needed to be more patient and that's why this happened. And I don't think that's the case all the time. I think a lot of times we ignore the fact that agency has a really big part of our life. And that for me personally, and this is not doctrine and this isn't everyone's opinion, but I don't believe that God picks us up and plops us in bad situations and says, learn, learn charity, learn patience. But I do think what God does is that he fought so hard for us all to have agency. And he fought for us to be able to choose whatever we were going to choose in this life. And with that agency, he fought for the fact that people can choose things that are going to hurt other people. And in order to honor their agency, a lot of times, God just kind of needs to let that happen. Because agency is so powerful. So So no, I guess in a way, I don't believe that God did this to me. I don't feel like God plucked me up and put me in this situation so I could learn how to be more patient, which I haven't, but I'm working on it. But I believe that God consecrates us in our lowest moments. And I believe that he honors agency, and he allows us to get to the depths, the lowest that we can get, feel so, so alone, so on the outside. And he sits there with us so that we know that he was there. He magnifies these things and makes us better people. And that doesn't always happen all at once. And I think that was a really big thing that I've really struggled with a lot, is that, why am I not incredible? Why am I not everything that people want me to be? And this has only been like 3 years. This has only been not that long. And I still have so much of my life left to go and so many things to learn in this time. It was really interesting. I ended up going and bearing my testimony in my home ward a few weeks ago, and I got up and I kind of shared a very brief synopsis, summary of my experience and the fact that I had not borne my testimony since the day that I came home, or the day of my homecoming. And I went up and I said the experience, and I explained that honestly what I know right now is that God loves his children. And that's what I know for sure. I don't know everything, but I know that. And ironically, that day, a member of the 70 was cool. In, yeah, I wish I remember his name, but he was in that chapel, and he stood up after and he talked to me specifically. He like pointed me out and forgot my name, and so I yelled it up, which was kind of cute. And he basically said that same thing to me of, you know, you're not going to know for a really long time all the whys, and you may never know in this lifetime why everything happens the way it does. But God consecrates those things for our gain. And that's so easy to say out of the moment. In the moment, it's so hard to sit there and think, this is going to make me a better person, because you don't want that. You just want it to be done. But I don't know right now. I don't know everything. I really don't. But I have faith that whether it's this life or the next, I will know. And I'll know exactly why all these things happen to me and to other people. I'll understand it. And right now I'm okay with that. Just kind of sitting in dissonance for a while.
Sitting in dissonance. Living with ambiguity, I think that's a sign of strength.
Thank you.
We've got about 7 minutes left or so. Ooh. Any other things you'd like to share? And one of the things potentially is just talk about why church sometimes is hard, because you can't sort of open up and share how you feel. And we're guarded in church. We're not. It's just hard to be vulnerable and honest and sort of transparent.
I know. For me, I think the unknown is scary for our human brains. And I think a lot of times as members of the church, we hear so often that if we keep God's commandments and we live righteously, we will be perfect. That's what we're striving for, right? Is to be perfect. And we want so badly to be perfect already. We want to be somewhere where we're not. And so a lot of times I feel personally like when I go to church, we operate on a plane of we are all trying to be perfect, so we don't want to talk about things that are hard. We don't want to talk about things that are scary in the slightest bit. And it's hard in those moments to raise your hand and say, you know what, I really appreciate what you said there, but this is my experience, and it's different. And you don't want to seem argumentative. Mm-hmm. As well. Mm-hmm. and you don't want to scare people. And that is the biggest thing for me, at least, is like, you know, I'll say something, and I love to read. I love to do things. I love to read about church history and stuff. So even things like that, you know, people will say things and I'll be like, yeah, well, you know.
Not quite like that.
Not quite like that, you know, and that scares people. And it scares people to see people struggling openly because we don't do it. We are not open with our struggles. And so it's kind of interesting because I think the more that I blogged, the more people I've had come and talk to me and say, thank you.
That's cool. This is
how I feel. And the more people I've come thinking I'm going to go inactive and being really afraid of the things that I'm writing. And I think that fear is just because we're scared of saying that we're farther away from our end goal than we are, you know, so we pretend like we're somewhere else. We place ourselves at a false reality, and it's scary when someone else says, I know, you know, that's at least for me. I have a very hard time going up in my ward and saying, you know, I love what you said about missions, and I'm so glad that your mission was so great for you. But like, I have post-traumatic stress disorder from this crazy experience that happened, and it scares people.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, that's a big thing that I'm working on. I really want to try to figure out the balance of not being so aggressive that people feel like you are denying all the, you know, simple blessings, because I think there are times that the gospel can be simple. And you don't want to deny that from someone, and you don't want to tell them it's not as simple as you think it is. Like, you don't know anything, because they do, and that's where they're at. But the gospel isn't that simple for me. And where do you find the balance? I don't really know. I'm still working on it.
I like that. I do think we need to be able to have harder conversations in church.
Yeah.
I think people are craving for authentic, vulnerable, real discussions, and it's not about leaving the church, it's more about staying.
Yeah.
So we can talk, and perfect love casteth out fear. And if we can get to perfect love, then we can hear everybody's stories and create much more authentic communication. But if we can't talk about in church how we feel, we can find people outside of the church that will talk about how we feel, and then we start to connect with them.
Yeah.
I think, well, maybe I don't belong in church. I actually belong with all these people that left. Because they can at least have the conversation.
Sure.
Other thoughts, just as we're closing.
Oh, let me see. This might actually be. There's a really cool quote that actually our mutual friend Cal Burke.
We love Cal.
We love Cal.
I saw you on social media with Cal at the Maxwell Institute.
Yeah, we went. We went
to listen to Elder Holland.
Yeah, listen to Elder Holland. Cal's amazing, and he has honestly been such a rock for me.
How did you meet Cal?
Honestly, via Twitter.
That's awesome.
He just followed me one time, I think after my blog. And so I had kind of followed him. His account has gotten really big.
Yeah.
Oh, he's so cool. And then we actually both got into. It's a super small class. It's LDS Political Engagement, Past, Present, and Future is what it's called. It's like 16 people in this class. And we talk about how the LDS Church has interacted politically with both, you know, the political specter in America, and also kind of politically within itself. The history of all of that, what's happening currently, and what that means. It's a fascinating class.
Wow.
Shout out to Professor Davis and Fluman, because they're awesome. They team teach it. And we actually both just ended up, I got it from my sister. Professor Fluman, he's on Twitter, and he had tweeted out that this class was happening. And so my sister sent it to me and said, you need to go to this class, because it talks about these things that people are kind of scared to talk about. And I really felt like I needed a home at BYU. And I felt like that's where I was going to find it. And so I registered for this class, like right before the class, Cal tweeted that he was in it. And so all of a sudden it was like, oh my gosh, I know you. And we went in, and the very first day we, you know, sat next to each other, and we've been such good friends ever since. And he just, he's amazing, because he is not afraid to embrace the hard conversation.
Yeah.
And he has helped me a lot. But he shared this quote, and then I asked him to send it to me. And it's by Chico Okazaki, and I'm sure you've heard of her. She's amazing. She was a counselor in the Relief Society presidency.
I think so.
Yeah. I think so. I don't know the history like I should about her, but she was incredibly vocal about embracing diversity and loving people. And kind of going off what you were saying, her quote says, "If you experience the pain of exclusion at church from someone who is frightened at your difference, please don't leave or become inactive. You may think you are voting with your feet, that you are making a statement by leaving. Some may see your diversity as a problem to be fixed, as a flaw to be corrected or erased. If you are gone, they don't have to deal with you anymore. I want you to know that your diversity is a more valuable statement."
That's beautiful.
It's so good.
That's really good.
Yeah. And can I bear my testimony?
Yes, you can.
I have a very strong testimony that that is such a true concept, that there are so many people that feel so on the outskirts, and they have a home. They may not feel like they have a home, but they have a home, and they're always welcome. They're welcome with us. They're welcome with you. They're welcome. And it's hard. I think it's hard to be different. It's hard to be vocally different. And you feel lonely a lot of the times, because everyone else around you seems like they are not different at all. That they don't have any struggles, or they are just breezing through. And that can make you feel very on the outside. But I just want to let everyone know that no matter where you are, no matter how you feel, no matter your gender or sexual orientation or race or socioeconomic status or whatever it is, that God has provided a home. And some people may not see that, and some people may not treat them like they do, but you do. And if you ever need anything, just let us know. Let me know. Let Sophie know. I know she thinks the same thing, and we love you. We love diversity, and it's what makes growth happen.
Just so profound. It's what makes growth happen. Sophie, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Harper, thanks for joining us. You two are awesome.
You.
And you fed my soul tonight. And
thank you.
You give me so much hope in the future of our church, of our world, of our society, when I meet wonderful, capable women like you.
Thank you.
So thank you, our listeners, for joining us for another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love.